Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Michael Barish of Barish for Gary. I'm so glad that you've joined us for this webinar to commemorate the fire and the sacrifices made by hundreds of New York City firefighters in 1975 and thousands of telephone company employees. And back in those days, they were from New York Telephone, AT&T, Empire City Subway, and telephone company from all over the country were sent to New York to help restore communications. The reason we've chosen to do it today is because on Saturday at 11 a.m., there's going to be a telephone fire plaque dedication at the FDNY Academy on Randall's Island. Everybody here today is welcome to attend. I hope you will. There's also going to be, I understand, an interactive memorial wall. So what we don't want to do is forget these firefighters or these telephone company employees who got sick, who died. And at that time, sadly, unlike the World Trade Center cases that I handled for both firefighters and telephone company employees, there was no health program established. There was no compensation fund set up by Congress or the telephone companies or the fire companies. So we think these men deserve the recognition for their sacrifice for restoring communication to Lower Manhattan 47 years ago. The telephone company, actually the telephone exchange fire has been called the single worst indoor toxic fire ever known. Millions of feet of PVC cabling melted and became airborne. This fire was several levels below street level and engulfed the entire building. Altogether, 699 FDNY firefighters and somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 various telephone company workers were all exposed to the toxins. It was called the Second Avenue Miracle by the telephone company, but people who got sick, people who know better, called it the Second Avenue Disaster. Dan Noonan is with us today from the FDNY. He was there that day, and you're going to hear from him. Tom Steed from the Belltel Retirees Association, he was there also. You're going to hear about his 4 months laboring below ground to help restore communication. And also with us today is Dr. James Dahlgren from UCLA. You're going to hear from him as well. And the link between exposure to PVCs and the toxins and the many illnesses that have erupted, just very, very similar to the 9/11 World Trade Center and to the burn pits, which you may have heard President Biden talking about in his State of the Union, or you've seen John Stewart, the 9/11 advocate, talking about that as well on his new show. So many people got sick at the World Trade Center, at the burn pits that have affected our military. Sadly, so many people died and got sick from the 1975 telephone company. Let's start with a short video to set the stage.
I got here as soon as the alarm was transmitted. They were smelling smoke all through the building, and different workmen on different floors tried to call in the alarm, but the phones were not working.
170,000 phones in Lower Manhattan had been knocked out.
So he screams to one of the workers, "For the love of God, we have a serious fire."
Flames erupted in the sub-basement of the Bell Systems building at 2nd Avenue and 13th Street.
This lobby here gives me chills because this is where we all came from the building to exit the building.
You could come to this building a year after a fire and still smell it. You can still, it lingered. It just lingered and permeated everything.
The task of pulling out the destroyed cables begins.
Yeah, Empire City Subway, New York tells people from out of state with us too. All working together.
Most every firefighter who responded that day came down with significant illnesses and cancers due to the toxins they were faced with while responding to the call.
Those people in the surrounding area were exposed to the same toxins as the firefighters and the 4,000 telephone company people that came in the next few weeks.
Like I said, I was lucky, stage 3 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, but I developed a cancer that was treatable. Most people didn't.
You know, it reminds me so much of 9/11, because they told us the air was safe, right?
Yes.
So the people came back to school, they came back to their residence, they came back to their offices.
3,500 Bell System men and women, work that would normally take years, accomplished 23 days after the fire.
And I'm sure that there's been no concerted effort to reach out to all these people to find out how many of them got cancer, how many of them got respiratory illnesses, how many died. These people are in the dark. Well, that's why we're doing this, to memorialize the sacrifice of so many of your guys and your guys, so that no one will forget.
So, Danny, let's start with you. You were, I believe, working as a young pup firefighter. And where were you working then?
I was working in what's known as Ladder Company 3. And we're right on East 13th Street, Michael. We're a block from the New York Telephone Exchange.
So you were first due.
Yes, sir. First due.
Tell us what you remember about that day.
Well, I remember I had the watch, which means you monitor the alarms coming in. And the alarm came in, but it was all broken and scratchy, which is very unusual. And what I did understand was report of a working structural fire, 2nd Avenue and 13th Street, the New York Telephone Company building. So we responded down the block, and it was a scene of confusion in front of the building with the telephone workers, and also engine company 5 was there, and they were already hooking up to the hydrant. And one of the foremen from New York Tel brought us into the lobby, us ladder 3 and the battalion chief, and he brought us to a display panel, an alarm display panel. And on that, it was blinking and flashing, and it was indicating a fire in the sub-cellar vaults. And these vaults are some 3 stories underground, Michael. They're all the way down there. And part of our function as a truck company in the FDNY is to identify the seat of the fire. So it was rock and roll time. We had to saddle up, and we began our long descent down into the sub-cellar vaults. In each landing we passed, we could see the smoke gathering up at the top of the fluorescent lights and was giving off an eerie glow. And also the fire alarms were going off, and they were klaxons, and they sounded just like a submarine's dive. And we got down lower and lower. Finally, when we got to the doors that indicated where this cable vault was, it had a high voltage. So we left our steel tools outside, and we made our way down, all the way down to the underbelly of these cable vaults. And the visibility, Michael, is zero. Zero.
I'm just curious, if I may, this is back, obviously, 1975. What kind of protective equipment did you have? Because I know when I get to Dr. James Dahlgren, I'm going to be asking him whether that was sufficient. I think we know the answers. But what were you wearing? Did you have bunker gear in those days?
No, we did not have bunker gear. We had turnout gear, which is these pull-up boots. We had we had the firefighter jacket. And we also had an SCBA, self-contained breathing apparatus.
And how long does that last for?
It lasts for 20 minutes. But, Michael, let me tell you, this thing, it was like carrying a safe on your back. And, you know, it was hard to make a swing if you're in a hallway or whatever. Several of the firefighters had to take it halfway off and make the swing. And it went for 20 minutes. as we were down there, just trying to get down to the subcellar vaults, already down, we can't find any fire. Zero visibility. I'm carrying a powerful searchlight. I think it's malfunctioning until I hold it right to the face piece of my breathing mask. And to add to all this is the polyethylene is melting off the cables, and now it's covering the floor, and our boots are adhering to this.
So my question is, at some point, did you get the word, get the hell out of there?
We sure did, yes. All our bells started to ring, and there were so many bells ringing, you couldn't identify whether it was yours or not, the warning bell on the cylinder.
And that's just so everybody knows, yeah, that bell is to tell you that you're running out of air.
You got 4 minutes, pal.
How did you get out?
Well, fortuitously, one of the rescue companies had laid a roof rope from the lobby all the way down to the subcellar vaults. And we were able to follow this rope back out, but we came entangled in other firefighters sent to relieve us. So it's a mass collision down there. And then we're all trying to reverse. The air is gone. Firefighters have no air. Other firefighters are taking their mask piece off and buddy breathing with each other. When we hit that lobby, it was disaster. People throwing up, retching, puking, grasping for any type of fresh air. It was, Michael, it was razor blades in your throat. That's what this was. This was something, even though I had 2 years on the department, this is something completely new for all of us.
So let's go to Tom Steed. Tom, tell us a little bit about you and your experiences from that day.
Yeah, Michael, in 1975, I was a cable splicer assigned to Bronx Construction. And this wasn't my first fire, because back in the mid-70s, Bedford-Stuyvesant, Harlem, the South Bronx were burning from massive arson fires. But, you know, they were single cable failures, not 644. So the morning I came into work on February 27th, my foreman told me to get my partner, get in the truck, meet him at 13th Street and 2nd Avenue. And I was shocked, because for the first time I said, we never worked in Manhattan before. He goes, we are now. Everybody's working there now because the building's on fire. So when I arrived, smoke was coming out of the upper floors. Firefighters in ladder trucks were attacking with streams of water. And we had to wait. We had to wait until the fire was out, you know, the following morning. And so we were all geared to go in, but now we had to wait again until the building was inspected and deemed safe to enter. Now, when it was deemed safe to enter, construction forces, our domain is the cable vault. That's the first place we go to. And power was cut to the building, but with our flashlights, we could see everything was black, everything was charred. So the first thing we did was rig portable lighting the length of the cable vault, powered by the Generacs on our truck. And the order was given, cut and remove everything. Cut the entire cable vault, make it empty.
How far away were you from the fire at this point?
Well, at this point, I was in the cable vault. The fire was out. There was still residual water. We were all in boots. We had, you know, 6-inch pumps on the street going all night. You know, they got it down from a full size swimming pool. It was probably 150 feet long by 75 feet wide, you know, and but there was still residual water in the bottom of the cable vault.
And so, Dan, how long did it take you guys to put the fires out?
Well, Michael, it was declared under control 17 hours. But what we did, we evacuated the building twice. One time there was an explosion, this hydrocarbon gas. It all accumulated and it lit off. Bam! Any firefighter who was near it knocked them off their feet. So they withdrew everybody from the building. And then they said, all right, let's attack it again. This time we got 78 companies there. We have hundreds of firefighters. And we went in again and we were withdrawn again. However,
Dan, if I can just interrupt you for a second, I'm looking at this photograph that we have up right now. And wow, is it eerie? I mean, first of all, you can see how much smoke is emanating from 13th and 2nd. But in the distance, you know, you can't help but notice the two World Trade Centers. And we're going to be talking about that in a few minutes. But go ahead, Dan. So you heard that bang, and then it's a miracle that no firefighters and no telephone company people got killed that day.
Yeah, but Michael, when folks say, well, nobody died that night, that day, that's really a misnomer. That isn't the truth whatsoever. Because at that fire, we had 239 firefighters go sick, what we call tapping out.
Right.
Now, that was in a day when you didn't do this. You always completed your tour, et cetera. If you didn't, your lieutenant would have to answer to the et cetera, et cetera. You didn't do it. We had dozens and dozens of firefighters lying all over the street. Those who lost consciousness were rushed to Bellevue. The whole community, people leaning up against buildings. This was something we've never, ever encountered before.
Well, this is, you've set up Dr. Dahlgren perfectly. So, Doctor, I'd like to ask you if you can tell us, you know, from your, experience dealing with these kind of chemicals, these PVC combustion. I'm reading here something that you've written previously, which is the PVC combustion products are known to include hydrogen chloride, vinyl chloride, monomer, and chlorinated dioxins. And the last two constituents are highly toxic and carcinogenic. They enter the body and damage DNA and increase future cancer risks. Can you tell us what was causing these guys to vomit and be so sick right there on the sidewalks as they were lucky enough to get out of that building alive?
Well, you're asking me that question, I think, correct?
Yes.
Acute poisoning levels for hydrochloric acid and vinyl chloride monomer can cause an acute illness. And the levels of exposure here were massive, immediately dangerous to life and health. And that's why people were so sick, because of the acute high-level exposure, these highly toxic chemicals. The stuff that caused the cancers later on was probably the dioxins, the vinyl chloride monomer. In other words, most of the wires were probably covered in polyvinyl chloride. But when you heat polyvinyl chloride, it forms vinyl chloride monomer. Vinyl chloride monomer itself is a highly toxic chemical. It's explosive, even if it's about over 10,000 parts per million. That may have been the explosion that was described. But those are acute effects. It damages the lungs. The hydrochloric acid and the vinyl chloride monomer both are highly toxic to the lung tissue. In fact, there's a condition known as meat wrapper's asthma when people were exposed to vinyl chloride monomer from cutting vinyl chloride film for meat. They got asthma from it. And some of them got very, very sick because the vinyl chloride monomer damages the lung. That's one of the reasons why so many of the firefighters had severe respiratory problems. The hydrochloric acid burned their lung, and the vinyl chloride monomer caused them to develop a severe form of asthma. And then, of course, we haven't gotten to that yet, but vinyl chloride monomer is a class one human carcinogen. Now, there was also the formation of dioxin and chlorinated hydrocarbons, whenever they're heated, form dioxins and furans. And these are among the most toxic chemicals known to man. And they cause cancer at the lowest level that we've ever studied in animal test systems. One microgram per kilogram, a very, very tiny amount causes cancer in the animals and in humans. So vinyl chloride monomer is similar, extremely highly toxic and highly carcinogenic. So what was going on here was probably something that the fire department nor even the telephone company had never experienced before. Horrendous exposure level to horrendously dangerous chemicals. And we saw, I haven't seen the exact numbers, but we saw a high rate of death within a short period of time from the acute effects on the lung, and then a much larger number of people dying over the next 20 years from cancers.
I'm looking at this picture now, doctor, and I see these telephone company guys sifting through the cables. None of them are wearing respiratory protection. You got one guy on the right here wearing a kerchief. Reminds me a lot of the guys who were participating in the rescue and recovery operations at the World Trade Center. I mean, doctor, you and I met, virtually, but we met 20 years ago after 9/11. And I remember you were one of the first scientists to sound the alarm about the danger of the toxins at the World Trade Center. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, that was another situation that had some unique characteristics, I guess you'd have to say. But the highest dioxin levels ever measured in the air was found in the air of the Trade Center a month after the exposure. It took that long for CDC to get there and start taking measurements. They had no business allowing people back into that neighborhood, of course, in retrospect. But even at the time, those high values for dioxins and many other toxic chemicals, by the way, the particles alone were damaging, but the gases, the fumes and vapor that people would inhale would settle in their bodies. One of the things about dioxins and furans is that they go into the body, but they don't leave. They go into the tissues and they cause damage years later. So people that survived the initial exposure at the Trade Center experienced profound and serious health effects, which we're still seeing to this day.
Oh yeah, listen, we there's no point in criticizing the EPA. The EPA administrator who assured us all that the air was safe to breathe, she has apologized. And look, fortunately, Congress did the right thing for the victims of the World Trade Center. Everybody working below or living below Houston Street today is entitled to free health care for the rest of their lives. People living below Canal Street or who were working below Canal Street, including thousands of telephone company and firefighters that we represent, are entitled to compensation for their illnesses. Unfortunately, those sickened in 1975 by this telephone company fire got nothing. And you know, we'll talk about that. The statute of limitations long since passed. At the time, the only thing the telephone company people were entitled to was workers' compensation if they got sick. And FDNY guys, they actually get great benefits from the FDNY, but there was no compensation fund back in 1975. Tom, I'd like to ask you, if you can, do you mind sharing with us some of your health issues that you have been diagnosed with?
Well, yeah, I was diagnosed with stage 3 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Oh, yeah. By the way, in this picture here that you see on the screen, you can see this was just taken a few weeks ago. You see the black stains that are still there on the building 47 years later. You can only imagine what was in your esophagus, your blood, your lungs. So go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, but, you know, cancer is funny. It has a latency period of decades to, you know, evolve and develop in a human's body. I was lucky. I developed a cancer that's 90% treatable. But some of my friends, pancreatic cancer, they were dead in 2 years. Brain cancer, 2 years. Stomach cancer, 2 years. And it goes on and on and on. And like I said, I guess I was just one of the lucky ones.
That's great that you can have that attitude. Dan, tell me what illnesses did you sustain from that fire?
Leukemia. And I was fortunate enough to become a patient of Dr. Dahlgren. And then post 9/11, I developed throat cancer as well. However, Michael, I want to add all of these families of the telephone fire firefighters. And there must be, I would say, in the hundreds, that also in their loved one who has maybe 10 years on the department develops these cancers. They're young, healthy, athletic men. They develop this. Many, many of them pass away a terrible death, and they have no recognition, no line of duty death status. They're usually put out on half pay with nothing. So here's this remarkable woman who are left to raise these families with a limited income and the husband gone of a terrible disease. And we bitched about this for years, the city hall and the hierarchy. We banged on the goddamn doors and nobody would listen to us. Our medical monitoring consisted of, on the medical folders of all 699 of us, was a stamp of a red star. So it wasn't long before the folks who worked at our Bureau of Health Services began referring to this as the red star of death.
Yeah, we're looking at it now, Danny. And there was a stamp that just said New York Telephone Company file, February 27th, 1975. I don't know what they were going to do with that file, other than, you know, give you some recognition. Did they ever send you for any special regular testing?
Negative. Michael, we had begged them for years to implement take a survey of all of us, find out who has this, who has this, who has this. And if it came back and they had, we're finding a large amount of throat cancer, which I believe from 1975, this fire, to 9/11, 3 out of every 4 throat cancers on the department was from the phone fire. Take all that information and then mail every one of us, say, we urge you, we're finding this, we urge you to go get checked and get checked now. Early detection saves lives.
I know, we always talk about that. Yeah, you know, you've heard me say this again, and I keep seeing so many parallels to the World Trade Center. I represented Detective James Zedroga. Jimmy was 34 years old, suffering from pulmonary fibrosis when he died, and they did an autopsy, and in his lung tissue, they found ground glass, asbestos, chromium, lead, benzene. You know, other than the ground glass, I suspect Dr. Dahlgren, many of the same carcinogens that you've been talking about, which they were found in the telephone company fire. Am I right?
You're right. Absolutely correct.
And doctor, why were they seeing, or Dan is talking about this and Tom's talking about this, so many blood cancers? It's obvious to me as a layperson why there was so much esophageal cancer and lung cancer, because guys were breathing in these toxins from both the telephone company fire and the World Trade Center site. But why so many blood cancers?
Well, lymphoma, that is cancer of the lymph glands, is the number one cancer that was originally diagnosed in patients with exposure to dioxins and furans. So that's not a surprise. The leukemias are also, I mean, the chronic lymphatic leukemia and chronic myelogenous leukemia are also closely related to the lymphomas. But the other issue is, of course, that dioxins and vinyl chloride monomer and furans, polychlorinated dibenzofurans, which is a close cousin and equally toxic to dioxins, it is a cancer promoter. So if someone's exposed to another cancer agent, which might not bother them, might not cause cancer, because of the high level of the dioxin in their blood and in their bones and in their fat tissues, it promotes the cancer and allows it to grow. It defeats some of the body's defenses that control cancers in that earliest stage, which are occurring actually fairly frequently in our bodies, but the body has ways of controlling it. But those ways of controlling it are interrupted and defeated by the dioxin. That's one of the reasons it's so deadly.
And of course, if you're not warned by anybody that you've been exposed to these deadly toxins, please make sure you go for regular checkups. Then by the time you are diagnosed, it's often too late. Tom, I know you've told me that you were working underground and in the vaults and the manholes around 13th Street and 2nd Avenue until July. That's 4 months later. What was it like underground for you during all those 4 months? And were you given any protection?
Well, Michael, you know, unless I wore a handkerchief over my nose and mouth, that was the only protection I had. But even though the building was restored in 23 days, service was restored, it was temporary. We had to make everything permanent, which took many more months. And sometimes, you know, when we did splice the new cables, apply battery and ground to energize them, cables that were laying in water as far away as Wall Street and Washington Square Park in the West Village short-circuited and failed because water leaked into those cables while they were sitting with no air pressure on them for at least 23 days. So we went out. I mean, that wasn't too bad, you know, getting away from 13th Street, getting out there and kind of, because we had fresh air blowers to our manholes and stuff, but it was still a monumental task.
Yeah, and I think it bears repeating, there were 4,000 to 5,000 telephone company employees that took part, not only in getting service back within 23 days, but then having to make it permanent, which, you know, these guys, your brothers, were really the unsung heroes. Just like the guys after 9/11, restoring communication. My office is just 2 blocks from Ground Zero. We had no electricity, let alone telephone service for months. And you guys got it back for us. So thank you. But you paid a real price for it. And nobody recognizes the job of the telephone company workers or the Con Ed workers. I mean, Danny, no offense here, but the firefighters and the cops, they get all the glory for everything they did. And in part because you paid such a serious price on 9/11, 343 firefighters, 60 police officers died that day. But, you know, so many thousands of firefighters and cops and telephone company employees and Con Ed employees have gotten really sick and thousands have died. But at least in 9/11, they're given the recognition. Back then, you got no recognition and no warning. I want to show a video from you remember the investigative reporter Arnold Diaz? He did a story 14 years after 1975. And I think it's very sobering. It's actually a story about the dangers that lurk beneath the in the subways with all the PVC cabling down there. And what happens when there's a fire, God forbid, those start burning, because a lot of civilians could easily be exposed to the same toxins.
Channel 2's investigative reporter Arnold Diaz begins now a special Target 2 report on PVC. About a half hour ago, Second Avenue became a wall of black smoke, wholly enveloping us. You couldn't breathe. You couldn't see.
The fire at the telephone company building in Manhattan occurred 14 years ago, but none of the 700 firefighters who fought it will ever forget it.
To be honest with you, it was like walking into hell.
What made this particular fire so horrible was the smoke coming from the burning telephone cables, a type of smoke the firefighters had never dealt with before. The first taste of it, and they knew they were in trouble.
It tasted like razor blades in the mouth, and then taking into your lungs, short, shallow breaths, and then it would induce vomiting, nausea, double vision.
Yeah.
We knew at the time it was absolutely terrible. Whatever it was.
What it was PVC burning, polyvinyl chloride, a type of plastic cable insulation that gives off highly toxic hydrogen chloride when it burns. 200 firemen got sick from the PVC smoke at the telephone company fire. Many say they've suffered permanent damage, including cancer.
It just changed the way my voice sounded. It changed the way I felt. I was very scared once I found out I had the cancer with the vocal cord. I just imagined I was dying.
And those who lived through that telephone company PVC fire also say there's only one solution to the miles of PVC underground in the subways.
I'm talking as a firefighter who went through this toxic hell, change it and change it immediately.
Well, in fact, transit officials did promise to stop using PVC 7 years ago. So why is the TA so far behind?
Yeah, as well, we can talk about the TA in another webinar. Doctor, did that give you some more information about what these guys were exposed to?
Well, it certainly underscores how much of the toxic material was in the air. But you know, it underscores the high toxicity of burning plastic, particularly PVC plastic. It's deadly material.
Yeah. Tommy, let me ask you this. I mean, it's easy to talk today about it, but, you know, if you knew then what you know now, what could have been done to remedy the toxic air situation that you guys were exposed to?
I would have immediately petitioned my union to bring an inspector in from the Occupational Health and Safety Administration to take an air sampling, and if deemed unsatisfactory, mandate remedial conditions such as high volume ventilators on the windows to pull all the toxic air out, and on the other side of the building, fresh air blowers to send fresh air into the building, keep everything circulating. But of course, they would have had to do this on 11 floors because it's an 11 floor building.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'd like to think that had you asked, you would have gotten everything you wanted, but you know, 26 years later after 9/11, when the EPA told everyone the air was safe and everybody participated in the rescue and recovery operation with no proper respiratory protection, kids went back to school. People like me went back to my offices. Residents went back to their homes. You know, the government isn't always doing the right thing after a disaster. I mean, I remember there were so many people at 375 Pearl Street working for the telephone company. And of course, 140 West Street was actually struck by the falling debris from the Trade Center. So guys had to go in there and make repairs right there, but you know, not being told the truth about the toxic dust. I don't know why our government doesn't just be honest. I guess they're afraid of telling us the truth sometimes. But, you know, as I said earlier, at least the government did the right thing after 9/11 or after Jimmy Zadroga's death by reopening the Victim Compensation Fund, by creating the World Trade Center Health Program. My big challenge now is getting the word out to people that telephone company people, while they weren't entitled to anything back in 1975, they are entitled to something from the World Trade. They're entitled to free health care for the rest of their lives. But they've got to enroll in the health program. But the problem is so many guys don't know about it because they think these programs are just for firefighters and cops, or they feel guilty maybe taking money away from guys who are sicker than them. I heard both you, Tom, and you, Danny, both say how lucky you are to to have had the cancers you are. And maybe people like you feel like, oh, I don't want to take money away from the widows. I mean, that's a problem. Congress fully funded the Victim Compensation Fund and the health program. And yet I still am having such a challenge in getting the word out there. So I rely on, you know, it's great that we do these webinars to help spread the word. Yeah, Tom, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, in a way, my company gave me great healthcare benefits. If it wasn't for those, I wouldn't be here. That helped treat my cancer and cure me. So in an inadvertent way, they did take care of me, but that's only because of our union contract and the great benefits that people went to work at the telephone company for.
So one of the questions we've been asked on the webinar today is Verizon used vendors and contractors. How do we get in touch with those individuals that worked at 140 West Street? And really, it's just word of mouth and you know, through Facebook and telling people, please register for the rights that you're entitled to. Doctor, I have a question for you here from one of our viewers. What symptoms can we expect to still see, and what illnesses do you think we still might be entitled expecting 40 years later?
Well, cancer can present, and usually by the time you're symptomatic, it's far advanced. So I would like to underscore the need to go and have a complete evaluation by your doctor. Tell them that you were exposed to this highly, highly carcinogenic environment, because even though we're a number of years past, there's still a risk because the latency can be very long. So the survivors still are at risk and should be on a special program. You may have to design your own special program, but request your doctor to do additional testing because we'd rather get it before the symptoms occur. Now, if you start to cough unusually, pain somewhere that's not normal, weakness and tiredness that's not normal, those symptoms of cancer. Now, there's also other diseases that are associated with exposure to vinyl chloride, such as autoimmune disease.
You know, you read my mind. One of our viewers just asked, you know, he knows the relationship to cancer because of what you've just said, but are autoimmune diseases linked to these as well? And then, Danny, I'm going to get back to you in a second.
Yes, the immune system is altered in a very precise way by these chemicals. And one of the things that becomes more common is the development of serious autoimmune disorders that are probably contributed by other factors. But these chemicals can play a role in increasing the risk for that set of diseases.
Well, okay, Danny, tell us, you know, I know guys went through air tanks so quickly, like over 1,000 air tanks, I heard, were used by the FDNY. What else do you remember? I know you've lived and you've really tried to spread the word about this fire. And, you know, you're a large reason why we're doing this plaque dedication on Saturday.
What I recall, Michael, is not only going through the air tanks, and when you say we went through over 1,000 tanks, each empty cylinder represents a firefighter who ran out of air. They have no air right there. And what also significant to me is the stench, the smell that came onto your flesh. You could shower day after day after day, multiple times, scrub, but nevertheless, it was still there. It was continuous. So just a horrific, horrific experience to go through. And if I can have one more 30 seconds.
Yeah, you can have as much time as you want.
Here's a short paragraph from our former chief of department, right? Former chief of department, John Hart, stated pre-9/11, quote, as it relates to injuries, duration and damage, it was the worst fire in the department's modern history. He added, if we had to fight the telephone fire today, we go about it much more cautiously. And if it was demonstrated that the smoke was hazardous to the firefighters, I would hold them out of the building. So, Michael, so many hundreds of firefighters sacrificed on this altar with the Red Star of Death as medical monitoring. It is an absolute tragic, tragic situation.
Well, tell us about Saturday's plaque dedication.
The next generation of fire department leaders were enlightened and they studied up on fires of the past, and the fire at the phone company, it jumped out at them. And I provided them with a lot of information. And they said, it's about time that we recognize and we give tribute to these folks. So we had a couple of plaques through this Fire Bell Club, which is an association of fire buffs, your beautiful bronze plaques made. And one will be dedicated this Saturday morning at the FDNY Academy, which we refer to as the Rock. And along with it, they're putting an interactive training wall where you can hold your phone up to a QR code, hit it, and a video similar to what you were showing was going to come on. And they also have firefighters like myself emphasizing to today's active firefighters, to the brother and sister firefighters today, how you have to absolutely maximize your personal protective equipment. You have to go all out with it. And all you have to do is look at us and the disaster that befell us and the phone company workers, the CWA workers. And also, Michael, all through this whole program, we never mention the folks in the community. Those people who lived in the neighborhood, who lived in those tenements, those six-story tenements, they lived among us. I could go back to my house in Queens. Tom could go up to Westchester, whatever. But these folks, it permeated their fabric and their apartments and their buildings. And it was just horrific, but there's nobody right there to stand
nobody
up.
Nobody, that's exactly. And that also reminds me of 9/11 when they, the EPA told us the air was safe. The residents came back to live. And I remember that you talk about the stench. I remember the stench of the World Trade Center. And we called it the smell of death because there were so many people missing. But the chemicals, those buildings were burning for 99 days. You remember that, Dr. Dahlgren? You studied that.
I visited the pile in November, which was 2 months after the planes hit the building. And there was still this strong odor, and it irritated my nose and my eyes and gave me a headache. And that was November, for God's sakes. So there was residual damage in the entire neighborhood. It was awful.
What is it about our society that the government feels like they can't tell us the truth, doctor? You know, why do they? I always thought it was because they were so desperate to reopen Wall Street the next week, which is why they, they told the American Stock Exchange and the New York Stock Exchange people to come back to work. Let's show our enemies how strong we are. But, to not tell the residents of 13th Street and 2nd Avenue, hey, go to a Red Cross safe shelter. It isn't safe for you to be here. You have to have your apartments cleaned before you come back. And they didn't do that. And they had to know how dangerous it was. Don't you think, doctor?
Absolutely. And I did use my voice, but I didn't have a very big voice to try to warn people that it wasn't safe. But there was a school just across the street from
Stuyvesant High School is one of them, but there were 20 schools south of Canal Street, I know.
Neighborhood that were all reopened and the kids got sick. Yeah. So they let the children leave the school for a while, But you can see how bad it was. The kids couldn't stay in the classrooms.
Yeah, we've spoken to many of the children that they're not children anymore, but they reopened Stuyvesant High School. which is one of the closest high schools to the World Trade Center, on October 9th. And we've been told the students would have bloody noses just because it was so awful to breathe, you know. And even though they might have eventually turned the air conditioners on, what was the air conditioner pulling in? Toxic dust. And, you know, they would take, these poor kids are walking to and from their subways. And that's why we're seeing 28-year-old women today with breast cancer. I mean, it's really horrifying. At least NIOSH has recognized the link between the World Trade Center toxins and these 68 cancers and many respiratory illnesses. But no formal government entity has recognized all these horrible illnesses to the telephone company fire. It's really heartbreaking.
Yeah, look, the government agencies, the congressional members, to realize how serious it was, the 9/11, that they couldn't put aside. It was just such a national and international story. That's why it got attention. The New York Telephone Company fire just never reached that level of understanding, and therefore they were ignored. And that's a sad comment. By the way, the neighbors of the World Trade Center never got, I mean, you say that the program exists for them, but a lot of it is just counting the dead and treating the sick. It underscores the need for a governmental agency like EPA and CDC to be held accountable, because they're our line of defense in these kind of cases.
Yeah, and you know what, look, what we're asking the telephone company to do is to reach out to their former employees. They know who was working on West Street and on Pearl Street. They know who the thousands of employees were. They have a moral obligation, not a legal obligation, I get it, but a moral obligation to reach out to these people and say, hey, you were exposed. And this isn't just a telephone company. I ask every big company to do this. I mean, we represent almost 500 people who are working at Goldman Sachs. We've had BMCC, the community college. They sent a letter out to their former students and teachers, letting them know that they were exposed and that there is this free World Trade Center health program and the victim compensation fund to which they are entitled if they're ever certified with the 9/11 illnesses. I wish that the phone company, and I call on the phone company, to do the right thing and send notifications out to their former employees. Tom, do you think the phone company would ever do that?
I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. I mean, they probably have lost a lot of records by now, a lot of track. Those that have passed away are retired. Our records are buried in a vault someplace way underground. It would be hard to trace, number one. And you know what the phone company attorneys are going to say? Prove it.
I know, but I'm not asking them to pay anything. That's, you know, the statute of limitations is long gone. But if these people working at Pearl Street or West Street were there for any period of time during the 8 months after 9/11, they're entitled to these benefits. Yet I suspect most of them don't know it. You know, it's interesting. We've looked at this, and Danny, this is a credit to your union and the UFOA and also the police unions. Your unions have done a wonderful job educating your members about these benefits to which they are entitled. And while 80% of first responders have enrolled in the health program and the victim compensation fund, less than 10% of the phone company employees and the Con Ed employees and the students and teachers and office workers, less than 10% of them have enrolled. And I don't know whether it's guilt or just a, you know, a misinterpretation of the law that maybe they don't know about it, or they don't know that they are entitled to the same benefits as the firefighters and the cops. I don't know. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, our guys have done a great job, but we had 343, and I believe we're up to 268 of those who developed cancer and have died in the past 21 years.
Yeah.
And they get this proper recognition and line of duty and everything else, which is regrettable to us, a generation before them, who got absolutely nothing.
Well, and how about the fact that the telephone company people today still get no recognition for their sacrifice? What do you think of that, Tom?
Well, you know, it's 47 years later. Our mantra at the time for our customers, our company, and ourselves was whatever it takes to get the building back up. That was our primary concern. And we did. You know, beyond that, we didn't think of ourselves or anything else. We knew something was radically wrong by breathing, just from what we were breathing, every gasp of air. But our primary concern then again was, you know, whatever it takes to get it done.
So, Tom, I know that the phone company was so proud of restoring service within weeks, and they called it the miracle on Second Avenue. What did you guys refer to it as?
Well, it was kind of like the disaster on Second Avenue. I mean, for us, it was a huge, huge failure. I mean, like I said, I'd been on fire jobs prior to 13th Street and Second Avenue, but, you know, single cable fires, not 488 cables, you know, so it was massive.
Dan, I'm going to let you have the last word since you.
Well, no, we referred to it as the Mount St. Helens on East 13th Street. And, yeah. You know, I think, Michael, all this is so current now. When the president of the United States gets up there at the State of the Union and talks about toxins that come out of burn pits, and it may have been responsible for his own son's death. I mean, it's prominent, it's consistent, and we're from the world's largest, outside the towers perhaps, but the world's largest indoor burn pit. So, Michael, you did a wonderful job. Thank you very much.
Well, I couldn't have done it without you and Tommy, and of course, Dr. Dahlgren. I can't express enough gratitude to you for participating. First of all, for helping to save Dan's life. Listen, I just hope one day I can grow a mustache that's that dashing. Now, you look pretty good, by the way, in those old pictures from the 70s. I can't imagine.
Oh, yeah. Rock and roll, yes.
You were probably killing it at Studio 54. One of the last questions I want to mention, and some people have asked, is this video going to be available so that you can share it? Absolutely. And then we'll send it to everybody who participated. You guys can all feel free to share it. If anybody has any questions for Tommy or Danny or Dr. Dahlgren, send them to me and I will forward them to the three guests here. We want to make sure that, you know, as I said at the beginning, we were here today to commemorate the sacrifices made by the telephone employees and the FDNY guys. Nobody ever gave you guys the recognition, but on behalf of a grateful New York, I'm going to say thank you to you guys, but to all of your members who participated and did get the service restored and unfortunately never really got the credit and never got the warnings you deserved. So thank you. It was a pleasure having all of you on today. I hope everybody who tuned in found this interesting and helpful. And if you can attend 10 a.m. Saturday at Randall's Island, we call it the Rock. It's the FDNY Academy right near the Triborough, right under the Triborough Bridge, which is now the RFK Bridge. But thank you all for participating. I really appreciate you joining us today.